chicken fried, and cold beer on a Friday night, a pair of jeans that fit just right, and a radio.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Jimmy Patronis is our congressman from Northwest Florida District 1. He joins us now. Jimmy, welcome back, sir.
Hey, buddy. Good morning.
All right. I am tempted to make this the last one because I think it's the most interesting thing we're going to talk. We have a lot of stuff to talk about, but I'll go ahead and lead with it because I think it's absolutely fascinating. You have proposed a bill, filed a bill dealing with firearm freedom, the Firearm Freedom Act. Tell us what's in it.
Yeah, so basically a provision in federal law that makes machine guns only accessible through a licensure permitting process. We're repealing that provision of law. So basically you'd be able to buy a machine gun.
Like I can go into, you know, gyms or I can go into sports academy or where I can just go buy a machine gun?
If they decide to sell them.
Okay. What prompted this?
You know,
aside from really it would be awesome. Okay. Aside from I've always wanted an Uzi or a fully automatic AK or, you know, I get all that. But just you tell me, how'd we get here?
We get lots of outreach on bill proposals. And I hope people that are listening know that the reason why I keep my DMs open on Twitter is just so people can reach out to me. We get a lot of good leads from folks, but this was something that was brought to us and didn't think about it really until they brought the bill to us. And I said, why not? You know, why do we continue to put more impediments to owning firearms? So anyway, I put the provision in place as a standalone bill, and we'll see if we get some traction with it. We're trying to move it.
Have you gotten any reaction from fellow members of Congress yet, pro or con?
No, literally it just popped last week.
Okay. All right. Very good. So obviously the gun grab crowd, public safety crowd, the people who are against, you know, all the mass shootings we have are going to say, good Lord, man, you just want to put automatic weapons in the hands of, you know, anybody who's crazy enough to go shoot up a place. You're again raising the level of threat that those people constitute to public safety, our kids, businesses, whatever.
There'll be those that say that. Yeah. But I mean, I'm also the same guy who's co-sponsored. There's two different bills that basically do reciprocity across our nation for any concealed weapons permit. So, I mean, right now, if you wanted to have a concealed weapon in, say, the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., you basically have to, you know, sacrifice your child in order to get that permit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's ridiculous that if you're, you know, have the necessary training that goes into owning a concealed weapon, then you should be able to have it in other states. So, again, trying to preempt local states, local jurisdictions, state jurisdictions in order to create reciprocity. I just think it's common sense.
You know, it is interesting thinking about the idea of having legal machine guns fully automatic, you know, what we call them now, sporting rifles, like an AR-15 or an AK-47 or something like that. You know, most people, I think a lot of people anyway, kind of lose their minds at that idea. I think of it as, you know, have you ever actually fired one of these guns and how quickly you can fire, even at semi-automatic rate, you can fire. Plus, you got bump stocks and y'all got all kinds of technology that can accelerate the rate of fire. And frankly, if, you know, not to pretend to be some military expert or whatever, but if I'm in a scenario where I'm shooting, I would prefer to have single shot because my aim is better and I can control the ammunition better. All you're going to do with an automatic weapon is run out of bullets fast and not hit anything, typically, you know.
I've never shot a fully automatic weapon, but I agree with you. You know, I've got a assault rifle, and it's pretty impressive how the mechanisms work as fast as they do when they do when you decide to pull the trigger. So
right. Yeah,
all the above, you're going to be more accurate with a semi-automatic because you put more thought into each shot.
I gotta believe that I'm sorry, did I cut you off? I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're good.
The part of the motive here also, it seems to me, is so many of the law cases and the convictions against people like, you know, veterans who have suffered a disability and need to have like the stabilizing pistol grip and that, you know, all of the arguments around what doesn't qualify as a machine gun, for example, have largely adversely affected, you know, people that were trying to protect their ability to get firearms, it seems to me. And so if you take away those definitional categories, you actually might eliminate some of these sort of frivolous and or harassment style lawsuits. You're taking away the ATF's ability to prosecute people for technicalities, right?
Well, I scratch my head sometimes if what the real purpose of some of these federal agencies are. You know, the ATF, I can question things that they do. And you've got, I think, in the District of Columbia alone, inside of Washington, D.C., I think there's 52 different law enforcement agencies, okay? You know, State Department's got its own police force, Secret Service, Park Police, D.C. Metro, Capitol Police. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And, you know, you think about all these different fiefdoms that are out there and all these territorial overlaps. And, yeah, you know, and some of these folks like to, you know, we got our own law enforcement agency because we have somebody to enforce just our statutes. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous.
You've also filed a bill, I think it's a veterans bill to help people keep both benefits and retirement pay. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes. It's the Major Richard Starr Act. We are a co-sponsor to the bill. The bill's lead is Gus Bilirakis out of the Pasco County area of Florida. Gus is a good man, has been a very outspoken leader on a lot of veterans issues over the years. And so the Major Richard Starr Act would just do exactly that. If you're on disability, it would allow you to collect your retirement benefits. We'll probably see. I've gotten the impression that there's going to be a pretty significant veterans package that is going to roll out of committee here in the next week. So we may see Richard Starr folded into that because it's got a lot of following. Secretary Hegseth came out last week and advocating for the legislation. So you might see a bunch of the things that they've been wanting to do, veterans related, all put together in one piece of legislation.
Also, of course, it was Memorial Day yesterday. I want to give you a chance to comment on that. What did you do? And what is obviously this area? It's a very important, holiday in this area.
Yeah, I was in Fort Walton yesterday at the VFW 235. We probably had, I would say, close to 300 people there. Because of the rain, we went indoors and we did the flower ceremony. We read through the list. When we were really more focused yesterday on the Gold Star families, and just making sure, you know, that's where my comments were driven. The colonel that spoke, that's where his comments were driven, because of there are those families every single day that have an empty seat at their dinner table. Birthdays, anniversaries, those special occasions are not the same because their loved one who gave a full measure to give us the freedoms that we currently have are no longer with us. And so, I mean, I know that the Memorial Day for some is big shopping day, barbecue, you know, all that stuff. It's a 3-day weekend, but we should always be focused on what the true importance of Memorial Day, why it exists, and especially in this part of the country. It's significant because of the thousands of families it touches in Northwest Florida.
Yeah, I heard a very small clip from President Trump's speech yesterday, and I thought the line was quite good, where he said, you know, basically, without Memorial Day, there'd be no Independence Day. And that's a pretty important way to think about it. Speaking of President Trump, he has apparently now thrown his weight behind permanent daylight saving time, that we would get rid of the fall back, that basically the time now would be the time forever. I've asked you about this before because we've been waiting for years on a House sponsor for a bill that the Senate had said yes to and the state of Florida had said yes to for the state of Florida. But now Trump is like, let's just do it for everybody. What do you think? Is this likely to happen?
Yeah, I think so. So I was talking, you know, Senator Scott has been championing this bill. I believe Marco had it for a while and then Senator Scott picked it up. And so Senator Scott got the bill teed up in the Senate. So as I was talking to Senator Scott earlier, we've got a representative out of the Sarasota area, Vern Buchanan and Greg Stube. I think both of them have the Florida, the House version of it, and it is moved out of committee. So this thing is getting aligned where, yeah, it sounds like we are on the verge of just getting rid of this frustration we have twice a year.
So I'm for it. But I take the note that when we did this in 1974, it took less than a year for us to undo it because you had a lot of kids getting hurt and killed, and you had people frustrated about the time of day when they were leaving from work and going to work. I mean, you know, we tried it, and it was so short-lived, you know, under the Carter administration. Let's see, 73, it'd be before Carter.
It'd been Ford.
Yeah, it would have been Ford. Thank you. So does that concern you at all, or do you just figure, like, this will be different?
No, that's one of the awesome things about calling your show. It's like Wikipedia. I didn't know that we had tried it once before till just now. So, you know, I'm game. You know, whenever we have those changes in schedule, there's definitely just about a week of just painful frustration. But let's rip the Band-Aid off and get rid of this thing.
Okay, hopefully. I don't know if I've ever mentioned it to you before, and if I have, I apologize for repeating myself, but let me make my 10-second case for standard Earth time. Instead of having time zones, we should have one time for the whole globe, and so people in California might go to work at 6 a.m., and people in Washington, D.C. might go to work at 9 a.m., but because we're going into space and we're talking about moon time and Mars time and all that kind of stuff, if we just had one time for the whole planet, then nobody would ever have to do the calculation. I'll call you at 6 p.m. I'll call you. Now, of course, some people are going to be going to work at 3 a.m., but they would just have to adapt to that. So this is my one plug for Earth time.
So, we've got time zones on the other side of the world where they're 30 minutes off from a neighboring time zone, because the two countries there hate each other so much, they don't want to be on the same time as their enemies.
Right. North Korea, I know, has a funky, weird time zone because of that,
so
too.
Crazy. So.
Anyway, yeah, I know you can't accomplish Earth time, but I just like to talk about it because I know it's crazy.
Yeah, I think you need to talk to Elon.
All right. I have been very critical of this anti-weaponization fund, which will be $1,776,000,000, so it's 1776. This is the settlement. The Trump administration settled with the Trump administration, essentially, because he was suing, and then the Department of Justice and the IRS, and they're not going to audit his taxes back for 10 years. It wasn't meant to be a $10 billion lawsuit. Now there's a settlement. Look, in my opinion, no organization should be settling anything with itself with the people's money. I don't care how good the cause is or how corrupt the cause is. It doesn't matter. There should always be separation, checks and balances, and that kind of stuff. It bothers me, even if it was for a dollar, but it certainly bothers me for $2 billion. And we're not even going to find out who gets paid for this stuff. Your thoughts?
Well, the Senate has really riled up over this issue as it's become a point of contention with them. I do see your point where, you know, a party shouldn't be settling with itself. Unfortunately, we do have things that happen in D.C. that are a conflict of interest, and that's where it's the role of Congress that's going to have to step up and intervene if there's something that is not that our constituents want us to see move forward. So this is exactly what the Senate is doing. You know, I think there's definitely those issues that have happened this last most recent four-year window when President Trump was out of office, where there was a weaponization of the government. There was some of that was taking place before he was in office the first time, where there was a documented effort by those that were against it, call it the deep state, call it wherever you want, that truly did not want to see Donald Trump enter the White House. There are those that like the way the government works, and an outsider would have definitely upset their ability to make a living in Washington because of the transparency he's brought in. So, I see where you're coming. This is going to be something that I think will be debated. And I do think that the president will, you know, sometimes he throws out pretty, interesting, out of the box ideas that do not end up moving forward. So we'll see how this one goes. Does the settlement stick? Or does the Congress step in and put some different guardrails in place?
Yeah, and I mean, even putting in things like an oversight board, not handpicked by the president, that are going to operate in the sunshine, in transparency, so that we can see the deliberations, where's the money going? You know, that to me is a baby step, but at least something like that, and let alone the whole thing itself. I did want to also ask you, just because I think it's fascinating, I had meant to talk with you about this last week, we just didn't get a chance. This H.R. 6644, the Road to House Act, wide, massive bipartisan support. It still hung up a little bit in negotiation between the Senate and the House, but this is the one that, for example, would limit the number of houses that any, like, investment company could own to rent. This is the thing they're doing now, is they're building whole subdivisions just to rent them. And, you know, the way that seems to displace home ownership and interfere with the market. But there were a bunch of provisions in this bill. I think you voted for it, but tell me where we're at on this one.
Yeah, so there was, in the House, we had some heartburn over some provisions that Elizabeth Warren was advocating for. And in the Senate, it's a little harder to break away some of the provisions that maybe a Democrat puts in that aren't going to be necessarily going to be accepted by the Republican side of the House of Representatives. So we had some contentions on some issues. The president has weighed in. There is a concern about the free market language in it. Should we be getting involved of not allowing an investment group? So there are some guardrails in place. I think one of the provisions that was taken out of the bill was if you're one of these investment groups, after 7 years, you must sell the house.
Yeah.
Or to sell the investment you made. I believe that provision was taken out. Because at the same time, I see the slippery slope. You don't want to discourage people from investing in construction of homes. At the same time, you want to ensure that monopolies aren't created regionally, where, you know, the actual ability to own a house is almost impossible.
Right.
So there's that slippery slope there of that language. Because I do think there was some abuse in areas where there was maybe a scarcity of availability of affordable housing.
Right.
But, you know, housing right now is higher now than it's ever been. And at the same time, there is housing around the country that is quite affordable. Nobody wants to live in New York or Illinois or California. They're fleeing those markets. So, I mean, there are those parts of the country where affordability exists, but nobody wants to live there.
Absolutely. Jimmy Petronis is our congressman for Florida District 1. As always, Jimmy, thank you so much for the time. We'll talk to you again next week, sir.
See you, buddy.